episode 207 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to choose whether you want to fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Grey Fox Games. This week, we're talking about how to choose what game to play. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Infiltrators, Math Rush, and Ceres. Then, we talk about what you should do if your group has trouble picking games to play on game night. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambi
and Crystal. One quick announcement before we hop into the main episode, and that is that we were so smart in our last episode in telling you that the Golden Geek Award nominations were coming soon, because guess what? They're open now! And if you love Board Game Blitz and you want to see us get nominated for a Golden Geek Award for Best Podcast, you can go nominate us. The link to do that will be in the show notes, but if you're a Board Game Geek user, if you go to the Board Game Geek homepage, there's usually going to be a place right there where you can click, and you can not only vote for us as your favorite podcast, but you can vote for all your favorite games from the past year as well. So make sure the games that you love get some recognition. So yeah, head over to Board Game Geek, and if you wanted to put our name in the hat to get us nominated, we would really appreciate that.
Yep, and our name is Board Game Blitz.
That is our name. There's a lot of
board game something
that start with board game. Yeah. Which it's funny, when we were creating the name of the podcast, what, now almost 9 years ago, we did consider that. But like, it is good to have people look at the name of your podcast and know what it's about. So yeah. I figure we were fine in that regard.
And there weren't as many podcasts out there that had.
That's true. Really, like, it's funny, we thought there were a lot, but compared to now, oh my gosh, it's like wild.
Recently, I got to play a new game that's not out yet in the US called Infiltrators. This is Infiltrators with T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S, so like a traitor.
Oh, so clever.
Yeah. But I bought this game in Taiwan, and I think Pandasaurus is picking it up and bringing it to the US in Q3. That's what I read on a forum. So we bought it because it's like, ooh, we could get it in Taiwan and play it early. But the reason I wanted to do this is because Infiltrators is a cooperative deduction card game. And I love cooperative games and deduction games. So I was like, yes, I need to play this. So Infiltrators, it's designed by John Keane and Liam Keane, published by Broadway Toys, and then Pandasaurus Games is bringing it to the US. It's 2 to 5 players. It's mission-based, so it's kind of like The Crew, where it's cooperative with missions that have like different rules each mission, but it's a deduction game instead of trick-taking, which is what I like. So the way it works is there's cards, different suits, colors, and numbered 2 through 15. And some of the cards are spies, I guess, and that's who you're trying, or like, what are they called? Suspects. And you're trying to figure out what those cards are, and you're all working together. So on your turn, you can either pick up one of the suspects, so then you'll have one of the suspects in front of you, and you can give clues for that suspect. So you can pick up a suspect on your turn, or give a clue for a suspect that's in front of you, or you can give a card to someone else who has a suspect, and they like use it as a clue, or you can accuse a suspect or draw cards on your turn. So the way the clues work is you either put the card vertically or horizontally. So vertically means it's a match, which means it matches either the color or a multiple or divisor of the number. And you don't have to do math in your head. Like, it shows on the cards which cards match with it. So like a 3 could be a 3 or a 6 or a 9 or a 12 or a 15, because those are all multiples of 3. And whereas a 9 could match with a 9 or a 3, because there's no 18 in the deck. So it shows all the matches on the cards. So if a color or one of those matches match, then you put it vertically. Otherwise, you put it horizontally. So as you place more clues down, people can like eliminate cards like, okay, we know it's not red. And okay, this looks like it's going to be a blue card. And it's a multiple of 3, so it's one of these ones. And then people can accuse eventually. And the way you accuse is there's this cardboard gun that you point at the card that you're accusing, because it's an infiltrator, right? And you use up a bullet token to shoot it. So that's kind of cool. It looks cool. But yeah, I like the deduction, and the missions have different things to it. So we played a couple of missions. I played it 4 players, which was fun. We played a couple of missions, and like in one of the missions, usually the discard pile is open information, but to do some things, you have to discard things face down. But like whatever's face up, you see. So the cards that people have played, you can see and cross those off. But then in one of the missions, it was like you had to do that face down. So then we we immediately forgot what cards had been played.
Oh no.
And we're like, oh no. But we still managed to win. But yeah, like I like deduction cooperative games a lot. And this one felt different than other deduction games I've played. And it looks cool. I like the theme of like the spy and you're pointing the gun at the card, which is kind of funny. And there's 20 missions in the game, plus 3 tutorial missions. We kind of skipped the second 2 tutorial missions because the first one was really easy. So yeah, that's Infiltrators, which is, I think, coming to the US later this year.
That sounds really neat. I definitely want to try it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, I heard about it first on Cardboard East YouTube channel. Jay, the host of that channel, used to live in Taiwan. And so he talks about games from Asia. And so I was like, that was one of the top games that came out last year. And so I was like, oh, that's immediately on my want to playlist. And then another game I want to talk about is Math Rush, which I got as a review copy from Genius Games. So this is designed by John Calveu and Steve Schlepphorst. I got the version Math Rush Addition and Subtraction, but there's also other versions. There's multiplication and exponents, and there's fractions, decimals, and percents. So this is a math game.
What? Math?
Yeah. And the one I got is the easier one. It's just addition and subtraction. But basically, it's a speed cooperative game where you're trying to place numbers in order. So you each have a hand of cards that have different math operations on them. So like addition, it'll have like 14 plus 3 or 10 plus 10. And you're trying to figure out what number that is, or like if it's higher or lower than the numbers that are on the table. And there's 3 different cards placed out at a time. It says like this has to be an increasing one, or this one has to be only even numbers but also decreasing or something. So you place cards down there and you're trying to fulfill the goals because it needs to be like X number of cards placed down for you to finish it. And you're working together, just doing it real time, placing cards down as you have them. And that's it. If you get it wrong, then you don't get points for that, but you're getting points if you complete the goals. I played it multiplayer and solo because there's a solo mode. I actually streamed it solo on stream. I didn't do very well. My mental math is a little rusty, but I was doing better by the third round. But it's a lot easier with multiple players because like with solo, it's really hard to get like the score you need to get to win. Or they have like the different score tiers, which I think is the same for all player counts. It's just a different number of cards that people get at different player counts. But like with a lot bunch of people, everyone can split up the math that they're doing because they are only doing math for their own cards kind of. So it's more minds working on the math at once, which makes it easier. Yeah, with solo, you're trying to do it all yourself, which is harder. So that's my excuse for not doing well in the solo mode. But when I played with 4 players, we won pretty easily. So it's also, I think, meant to be also for kids, like learning math and practicing their math. It says ages 8 plus. When I was that age, I was probably a lot better at addition and subtraction than I am now. So kids would...
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, 100%, kids would be right?
Better at it. A speed math game, it would help having kids on my team. So I need to play it with kids. But my kids aren't that age yet. So when they're older...
I mean, your kids are pretty smart though. They'll be there before they're 8. I am certain. Yeah, I definitely... Mental math was like is a skill that you can train, which mm-hmm. not everybody knows. When I was in middle school in my gifted class, we would actually play a game. I'm sure that it wasn't unique to us. I think it's a game that exists in other forms, but mm-hmm. like where one kid would be standing up and would stand behind another kid, and then the teacher would give us, usually it was multiplication based, mm-hmm. but like multiplication problem, and it wasn't like, you know, like 4 times 6. It was like bigger numbers, like stuff that you'd normally wouldn't think you could do in your head, but when you practice that kind of stuff, you can. And I remember being really good at like mm-hmm. big mental math in middle school. Now, nothing. Literally, it's all gone. I have none of it left, and that makes me a little bit sad. But I remember really enjoying that game, which thinking back, I'm like, man, I was a nerd. Which yeah. I know already, but like, woof, that's nerdy.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to learn Abacus a while ago so that I could get better at mental math because like that could help. And then doing Abacus in your head, I think you can do like really tough mental math. But then I had kids and like kind of stopped practicing. So yeah.
It's funny, I've actually never looked into how an abacus works. Like, I don't mm-hmm. know how abacuses function. Because, yeah, I remember specifically the type of mental math that I knew, I assume there are multiple types, was like, you know, if you get 26 times 34, then mm-hmm. you multiply 20 times 30, and then 6 times 4, and then you mm-hmm. add those together. And that usually you can do way more quickly.
Yeah, that's how an abacus does it.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, like, I figured maybe, but I, you know, didn't know.
So that was Math Rush, and then plus some extra math talk.
Yay, math. All right. I recently got a game to the table that I had backed on Kickstarter a little while back, and it shipped to me a few months ago, and I just hadn't been able to get it to the table quite yet. And that is Ceres from Artipia Games, designed by Gustav Sundström. Artipia Games also publishes The Pursuit of Happiness, which is one of my favorite worker placement games. So when I saw that they were making a worker placement game set in space, which is one of my favorite themes, I backed that Kickstarter back when it was running. And just to be clear, Ceres is not like a TV series. It is the Dwarf Planet series, Ceres. I don't even know if I'm actually pronouncing it right. I am just going to keep calling it Ceres, and we'll just deal with that. So in this game, the theme basically is that Mars has been colonized, and there are all of these companies that are mining the asteroid belt that is near there. And Ceres is a dwarf planet that is kind of in the midst of the asteroid belt. And so it's kind of become a base of operations for all of these different mining companies that are going to be mining asteroids in the area. The game is played over 3 rounds that represent 3 years. What's neat about this game is, unlike a lot of worker placement games where you're just given a set amount of workers and then you place those out and then that's it, there's kind of 2 different types of workers that you have available to you. And one of them is your private supply of leaders that you can place out onto the board. And the other is a supply of color-based workers who are kind of living in the living quarters of the station that you can recruit to do different actions for you. So when it comes to your turn, you can place one of your 5 leader tokens onto specific spaces on the board to complete certain actions, or you can actually pull one of the little spacemen. I'm going to keep calling them spacemen, even though that's not the official term, but they look like little, you know, guys in spacesuits. You can grab one of those guys, and depending on what color it is, you can place those onto cards in your tableau. And assuming that the spaceman you grabbed matches the card color, you can complete the action on that card using that spaceman. So there's more pieces available to you than I think there normally would be in a worker placement game, but those ones that are out in the living quarters are available to anyone, and there's a limited supply of the different colors. There are some extras that show up each round, but those are randomized, so you kind of have to keep an eye on what cards your opponents have in front of them, because like if a bunch of people have extra red cards and there's only a certain number of those little red spacemen available, and you have a red card that you know you want to activate this round, then you kind of have to decide, like, you might have other actions that you want to do first, but those red spacemen might run out and there won't be another way to activate those cards. I have to say that one thing is that the board is filled with iconography and it is not immediately intuitive. It actually kind of, it doesn't look anything like Pursuit of Happiness, but it kind of is reminiscent to me of when I first learned Pursuit of Happiness, that there are things on the cards and on the board that you're like, I don't remember what that means right away. But then once you pick it up, it's not too bad. It's not the worst as far as iconography goes, but some of the icons are a little hard to remember what they actually mean. So some of the things that you can do on the board, you can launch one of your scouts out into the asteroid belt to place it out in the belt to gather resources for you. You can increase your skills in how, like, you can give yourself special abilities when you complete special actions. You can grab new cards for your tableau. You can pick up cards that will give you some really big points for in-game scoring. And one of the coolest things is all of those places on the board have a limited number of spaces that you can place leader tokens, and that is determined by the number of players in the game. But almost all of the actions on the board have another place on the board where you can pay something extra to do other actions that are on other places of the board. So specifically, there's a council that you can gain influence cubes in, and a lot of the actions in that council are actions from other parts of the board. board. So if all of the spaces in one area have already been filled, rather than you just being kind of out of luck, there are often other places you can put a token. Maybe you have to spend a little extra something, like an influence cube, but then you can do that action you wanted to do even though all the spaces for it were already filled. So this didn't feel like one of those worker placement games where you're just like, oh my gosh, they took the thing I wanted to go to and now there's nothing for me to do. Like, it almost always felt like there were things that you could do. It didn't feel limiting, but it still felt tight because you still, because of like the spacemen and whether you want, like, putting your leader tokens out versus grabbing the spacemen before other people grab them, it's a really delicate dance, and having to choose which actions you do first and also what spaces are going to be available, what resources are going to be available. Like, there's a lot of delicate dancing in that regard that made it really interesting. There's a lot more nuance that I'm not going to get into here, but I will say, like, anytime I play a game that I backed on Kickstarter, I always try and be cognizant of the fact that, like, I think generally people who have sunk money into a thing tend to want to like it more, right? And I really tried to approach this game skeptically, and I honestly was really pleasantly surprised. Like, I didn't expect this game to be bad, but it impressed me in ways that I did not anticipate. As soon as we got done playing it, me and the other two players all went, we want to play this again, like, right now. We didn't, because we didn't have time that night, but I think that's a really good sign, right? Like, we all were like, oh man, I can see where I could optimize that and how I could have done this better. And it's one of those games that you immediately go, oh, okay, now I kind of get it, and you really want to, like, play it again so you can do better. And I think that's the sign of a good worker placement game, is when you know that you can optimize things more. The theme, to me, the space theme, barely present, honestly. Like, it does not feel like a game where you're out in space. Even though the board is all spacey and you're theoretically mining asteroids, I didn't feel like I was in space at all. Oh. But I still loved it. So, like, I'll take it. It's okay. I would say it is not the most thematic Artipia has put out. Pursuit of Happiness still takes that crown for me. But
yeah, because I feel like their other games have been pretty thematic. Or the ones that I've played, Pursuit of Happiness, Kitchen Rush.
Yeah. And this one, the board looks thematic. The artwork is great. Mm-hmm. Everything is visually, like, aside from, again, the iconography that's a little bit hard to decipher at times. But yeah, I didn't really feel like I was a mining corporation mining asteroids in space. Like, that did not... But it was a worker placement game that I really enjoyed, and so I'll take it, basically. So if you like unique worker placement games, I'd say this is definitely one to look into, and I'm looking forward to playing it more at different player counts in the near future. So that was my first take on Ceres from Artipia Games.
A few episodes ago, I think we mentioned in passing that it's very hard for groups to pick a game sometimes to play. And yes, so we decided to...
Yes, that's a thing.
Yeah, that is a thing. So we decided to make an episode about that. Coincidentally, someone in our Discord, Robot Wizard, talked about how their group picks the what we're going to play thing, how they solve that problem. So they made a game called the Board Game Game. So they use a game to pick what game they're playing. So they have, like, a big description of it in our Discord server. So join our Discord if you want to see that. And they also have full rules written out that they said they can send you if you want. But basically, they have their games logged in Board Game Geek, like their collection, and Board Game Stats, the app that I use to log plays and many people use to log plays. And I didn't know this, that Board Game Stats has a random game generator.
I didn't know that either before this.
Yeah, so you can custom filter your games if you go to the Games tab, and then there's a little die icon in the top right, and it just picks a random game. So they randomly pick a list of 3 games from their collection based on whatever, like, number of players, amount of time, whatever, like, filters. And there's probably other sites that can do this random game generation, but they number the games and then everyone votes on which they want to play secretly. Simultaneous revealer, and the winning game is what they play. So basically voting, but based on random game choices initially, which they said that after using the method the first few times is that they often end up playing games they wouldn't have picked normally, because, like, picking a random game, it's like, oh, that's not something that that we would be like, oh, I want to play this, right? And they said, I've even been lukewarm on one, but ended up having a great time. And it was a reminder of how fun some of the games are that are buried in our huge collections.
That's so really neat. Cool.
Yeah.
First off, I think it's an amazing idea and I love it. But the thing that immediately like worries my brain in particular is there are some games in my collection that I haven't played in long enough that I would be scared that I wouldn't be able to teach them properly. And so I'd be curious to hear from Robot Wizard, like how they account for that potentially. Because yeah, like I wouldn't want to omit all the heavy games or all the ones that would be more difficult to teach, but I also wouldn't want to do a bad teach of a game. So I wonder, did they pick them like in advance or right away, like right before they play?
Well, they generate the list following agreed upon parameters. So maybe like while you're generating the random list, you can veto them or something like
that.
Yeah,
maybe.
I can't teach this, so.
Yeah, that would make sense. Like you can narrow it down to some degree.
Yeah. But yeah, I would just try like doing the random thing. I was like, oh, I haven't played that game in a long time. Like just seeing these games like, oh yeah, I forgot I had that.
I do have those moments when we pull a game off the shelf that I just haven't played in a while. Even games that I like raved about and played a lot when I first owned them. Like last year at some point, we pulled out Quacks of Quedlinburg because one person hadn't played it ever. And the rest of us had played it a ton of times, but we were like, wait, you've never played Quacks of Quedlinburg? Like we had that, you know, that silly moment. And so we pulled it off the shelf and I was just like, man, I still really like this game. Like it can have a runaway leader problem sometimes, but it is still just lots of fun. And yeah, I think especially with some of the games that I kind of tended to like burn myself out on when I first got them, I kind of put them away and don't get them back out for a while. And then when I do get them back out, I often am like, oh yeah, I really do still love this.
Yeah, there's a reason I played it a bunch. Yeah, that happened to us with Codenames recently because one of our friends hadn't played Codenames and we're like, oh, let's play Codenames. Like we haven't played it in a couple years and it's still fun.
Yeah, I did the same thing like when I started playing Codenames online with people because I hadn't played my physical copy in a long time because I burned myself out on it hard. And yeah, then playing it again, I was like, this is still so fun.
Yeah.
It really is a winner.
So I've never played the board game game and I don't, it doesn't sound like you did either. So what do you usually do to pick games?
So what's great is we have one person in my game group, Greg, who listens to the podcast. Hi, Greg. Love you. You're the best. Who is like more organized and better at planning things than pretty much anyone else. So what Greg tends to do is kind of take the reins, which I think is super helpful for our particular group, but I know wouldn't obviously work for everyone. But what Greg will often do is like if we set up a game day, he will then send a group text to everybody saying, here are the games that I'm thinking about bringing, and he'll kind of put a big list, and then often I or somebody else will be like, oh, I've really been wanting to try that game or whatever else, and so then he'll bring the games that people mention. Those are typically like newer games that we all want to try that we haven't played before. We as a group sometimes are bad about getting back to old games. I think what we tend to do is when we're picking things in advance, we tend to pick the new stuff, right? Because that way people can read rules and learn how to teach them if necessary. Then after we play those new games that we've already pre-selected at game night, then we have that moment of sitting at the table where we're all just like turned around staring at my game shelves going, what should we play now? And sometimes somebody will just notice something or I will just grab something kind of on a whim. But we do have those moments where we really struggle to know like what should we play now, and we don't often have a good solution for choosing. So we're kind of better when we pick stuff up front, I think, but in the moment we often have those moments of, oh gosh, what do we do now?
Yeah, we have that a lot now. Nowadays we have weekly game nights. We have a group text where we're like, okay, who's coming? And so we know how many people are coming. And then sometimes some of our friends bring games that they want to play or that they think maybe people might want to play. I don't know. But we don't usually say ahead of time now. It used to be like if there was a bigger game that we wanted to play, we would say like, oh, let's play this one on this date. And we'd schedule game days for that game or something, but we don't do that anymore because we have kids. Yeah, so now like just for regular game days we have people come over. Sometimes I have like a review copy that I want to get plays. I'm like, oh, I want to play this, who wants to play this? Or someone brought a game. One of my friends now works at a publishing company, so like she sometimes has prototypes of games, and like so she brings over games that she wants to play. And then sometimes friends have new games that they brought that they want to play, so it's like okay. And then sometimes we split up, sometimes we don't. And then yeah, we have a lot of the look at our shelves. If no one brought a game that they like specifically want to play, then we're just like, okay, what do you guys want to play? What do you want to play? I don't know. What do you want to play? And no one's like super assertive. So everyone just like, anything, what? Yeah,
that's the problem with being friends with very nice humans is everybody is kind of like, I don't know, what do you want to play? I don't know, what do you want to play? And I have found, though, in those moments that sometimes someone really does just need to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is sometimes the decision will get vetoed, but you have to make a decision before that can happen. So like, yeah, somebody, if we're staring at my game shelves, somebody might be like, oh, what about, you know, that game? And I'll be like, I don't feel like playing that game. Like, I don't know what I do want to play, but when somebody can name something, then I can be like, not that, like, not that. Like, I'm not in dinner. Yeah, it is like choosing dinner. Honestly, it's like, yeah, like, okay, no, I don't feel like Italian food tonight. Like, I don't know what I want, but it's not Italian.
Anything but Italian.
Right?
And that one that you just picked.
And also not that either. Yeah. Like, you don't know what you want until you hear it, kind of a thing. But I think that is kind of one of the problems of having a large game collection, is that, you know, human brains do get overwhelmed when they are presented with too many choices and lock up. Like, that's not just a board game thing. That's a human thing. And it doesn't matter what you're trying to decide on. The more options you're presented with, the harder sometimes it is to choose. Yep. So I wonder, this is me thinking off the top of my head, I wonder if, like, in the future, if when we're having that moment in my house in particular, what if I just kind of chose a random cube from my Catlax? Mm-hmm. Like, I narrowed it down to a single cube, which my games are not sorted by, like, genre or color.
Mine
or...
are, so I'd be like...
Oh, yeah. See, so yours would be a little different for you.
Okay, well, we picked the real-time cooperative one.
Some of my cubes are slightly grouped. Like, I have a lot of my Asian games kind of all put together, because I always want to know where those ones are. But a lot of the cubes are kind of random, and so I can maybe just pick a cube, and then I can say, okay, someone else, tell me one of the games in this cube you don't want to play, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe narrow it down and just keep going further and further until we only have one game left, and that's the one we're going to play.
Yeah. Or if you have, like, the grid of cubes, you can, like, roll dice to get the grid to be what cube it is, and then roll dice to see which game.
Yeah. Well, because I've got 2 5x5s, so I have a total of 50 squares. But I could probably eliminate a lot of the squares along the bottom row, because a lot of the games in the bottom row are either specific types of party games or games that are less likely to get ever pulled off the shelf, but they still need to be in my collection, so they just kind of sit down there. But yeah, I like the, or I could do like grid coordinates.
Well, it's a 5x5, yeah, grid coordinates. Yeah, and then just re-roll on a 6 or something.
Yeah.
And then that square you look at, yeah. But I think that's the limiting of choices is what helps, like, having new games and why our group tends to play more new games, because it's like, okay, we brought this new game and that's what we're going to play. We're looking at that. Okay, we'll play that. Whereas we, looking back at our shelves of old games, like, there's too many. With the most recent time we played games, I really wanted to play Infiltrators because I just got it and I want to play it and talk about it. And so I, like, had it on the table. I'm like, okay, I want to play this. Who wants to play it with me? And so that's how we ended up splitting up. The other group actually played Tichu, which is an older game, but because, like, the people love Tichu, and so they always want to play it whenever there's a chance. So they're like, I'll play Tichu if there's 4 people. And so we ended up splitting up and doing that, which worked out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I never get to play Tichu in person. It's so hard to find a total of 4 people that all really want to play Tichu.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like for future ones, if I want to play an old game again, I just, like, take it out and put it on the table or something, and then it'll be up front in people's minds.
Yeah. And I think if you are obviously, like, this, you know, the type of game group that you play with can really affect this. But if you're gaming with friends or people that you know relatively well, especially if they're friendly people, which I hope they are if you're gaming with them. Yeah. But, like, I think in a lot of situations, if I were to grab almost any game and say, I really want to play this, then I think the people around me would generally go, okay, let's do it. And I would do the same for them. Like, there have been times where one of my friends brought over a game that I wasn't super keen on playing, but they were excited about. And so I went, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. And kind of like what you mentioned earlier, sometimes that ends up being way more fun than you expect. Mm-hmm. It's that whole, we've talked at length in past episodes about subverting our own expectations in regard to, like, the type of a game or even, like, the way a box looks. Like, sometimes things are off-putting for weird ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, having somebody else make that choice can help subvert your own expectations about a thing and force you into something, which could be a lot of fun.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Late pledges are still available for Clans of Midgard and Reavers of Midgard the card game, so don't miss your chance to add to your Midgard game collection. And if you want to buy games at grayfoxgames.com, you can get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitz Care community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, we can play with this or we can play with that. We can play with this or we can play with that. We can play with this or we can play with that. I think we'll play with this because this game's where it's at. Bye, everyone!